Now we're going to speak to Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail a Future, because it turns out that Crossrail, as we know, has been very, very largely delayed by unforeseen problems. It's costing an awful lot more than we thought it was going to do. And it now turns out that almost 500 train drivers are actually employed on salaries of up to £59,000 a year, even though they're not actually driving any trains. Bruce, a very good morning to you. What's going on?
Good morning, Mike. Well, it's not quite as you describe it. I mean, it is true that they've got all these train drivers on their books, but they are driving trains. Crossrail is operating. It's just the central section which isn't ready to go yet.
So, right. So which bit of Crossrail is operating then?
The sort of outer branches, if you like. So, obviously, when you go out of London, Crossrail comes out of the tunnels and goes overground towards Heathrow and so on.
Oh, so if I wanted to go to Heathrow on Crossrail, I could?
Yes, you can, because what used to be, I think, the Heathrow Express or Heathrow Connect has now become part of the Crossrail.
Ah, so what they've done is they've changed the name of the Heathrow Express to call it Crossrail, so they can say Crossrail's working.
Well,
why don't they just rename the Jubilee line Crossrail, and then we can have it going all the way across town?
Hey? Yeah, nice idea.
It'd be cheaper, wouldn't it?
I mean, there are sort of serious issues about... you know, the project management on this, the delay.
You're telling me.
It's very easy to sort of get angry at the drivers who appear to be sitting around doing nothing.
I'm not angry with the drivers. I'm angry with the management.
Well, I agree with you. You know, so there are questions to be asked about what went wrong. You know, where does the incompetence lie at the heart of this? And you know, I think really, to some extent, the buck has to stop at the top. You know, TfL are sort of the overarching managers of the project, and they haven't done a great job. I mean, you know, with the best will in the world, big projects like this, things will go wrong. But they've gone a little
Bit too far. Yeah, but you know, don't you think we're a bit too willing to accept that as an excuse? Oh, well, things will go wrong. You know, every major capital project, we are told, eventually runs over budget. Well, why? You know, who are the people making the budgets?
Well, yeah, I think it's a fair point. You know, they don't all run over time, actually. You know, there are big projects that get on time and on budget, but, you know, they're people tend to shout about those less.
Yeah, I can't remember the last one that did. Can you, Bruce?
Well, I think for example, what used to be called the Channel Tunnel Rail Link, that was on time and on budget.
Was it?
I think, you know, we... Every time something goes wrong, there are lessons to be learned.
Yes.
So why aren't those lessons being learned and
See,
passed
that,
down
that
the line?
That is the crux of the matter, isn't it? Yeah, because they always we have a sort of standard procedure in this country, don't we? Right. We're going to find a load of money to make this great new infrastructure solution work for everybody, right? Then we get sort of halfway towards the point at which it was meant to be ready, and we say, well, it's going to cost a little bit more money now because of this, that, and the other, and it's probably going to take a little bit longer than we thought because of this, that, and the other. And then afterwards, when everybody goes, why did it take so long? Why is it not working properly? Why did it cost so much money? Everybody says, well, obviously we'll have to learn lessons and we'll have an inquiry, and nothing changes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And, you know, as you were describing that, I'm thinking of a couple of other examples. We've seen the costs spiralling on HS2. We've had cost overruns on the electrification of the Great Western. And, you know, that really bothers me as a rail campaigner.
Sure.
You know, I want this investment, and I want it to be done right. And so, you know, it makes the case for future rail investment harder, because people can say, well, look, it's going to overrun, isn't it? So, you know, I think, that we need to pile pressure on the politicians to sort of make sure that those lessons are learned, so that we don't have these overruns in the future.
But that's the problem, isn't it? Because you, and I wouldn't ask you to go on the spot on this one, but you could not guarantee to me that the budget, which has now risen by 2.8 billion to 17.6, which is quite a substantial rise already, you can't guarantee to me that that's not going to get even higher, can you?
No, I can't. No. I don't think anyone can, really. I mean, you know, I think we can make... Given that they've sort of done most of the work, you know, they've laid the tracks and built the tunnels.
Right.
I think that's most of the hard graft done. But it's still, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. And, yeah, who knows how much it's going to cost.
Well, I mean, they were digging up Tottenham Court Road for the best part of a couple of years. They now finally reopened Tottenham Court Road. So I presume that that's all done. So that part of the tunnels going through the central part of London is finished, right?
All the tunnels are built, you know.
Right.
It's like the signalling and the testing and maybe the overhead power equipment that isn't quite ready to go yet.
Right,
or maybe they've discovered a few leaks or something. But, it's frustrating.
And is it going to be as sort of life-saving a service as everybody seems to think it is going to be? Because, I mean, it's all very well saying you can now go from Berkshire to Essex, on one train, but I don't know anyone who wants to do that.
Well, no, I think it will be a success. I mean, you know, we have to look at this as a service that is, if you like, halfway between a sort of local tube service and an intercity service. It's a sort of regional service, and there is a huge, well, you'll know, there's huge overcrowding on the tube, on London Underground and transport in the London area generally. So there's definitely a
there
big
is, demand. But then London Underground is a very well-run operation. I mean, as much as, you know, occasionally there's the odd strike and occasionally there's the odd thing that goes wrong, you know, it's a very well-run transportation system, I would say. And in many ways, it's even possibly the envy of the world, the way the numbers of people they move through and the value that people get from it. Whereas there's a bigger problem for me on the trains that come into London from outside.
I'm not sure that's necessarily true. I mean, what you've got with the London Underground is something that's established and up and running. So you sort of get to know, you know, the people running it get to know how to run it. But this is like a sort of east-west version of Thames Link. And Thames Link, as we know, is very successful. So much so that they've had to improve that and increase capacity and so on. So, you know, the demand for it is clearly there. I've no doubt that people will use the trains and it will relieve some of the congestion on other lines. But, you know, these things take so long to implement and it's so frustrating that, you know, these things sometimes go wrong.
Well, let me quote you a couple of interesting increased budgets, right? Whitechapel Station, originally budgeted for 110 million. Do you know what that went up to?
I dread to think.
659. 659 million. I mean, that's increased by six times. That's incredible, isn't it? I mean, imagine if you went to dinner with your wife and you thought, I'll take 100 quid because that'll be about right for dinner. And it turned out to be 600.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd be pretty shocked, wouldn't you?
Well, it'd be time to get a new wife under those circumstances, wouldn't it?
But, well, that's very... I couldn't possibly comment on that. But, I mean, certainly you wouldn't want to pay £600 for a dinner that you thought was going to be 100, is what I'm saying.
No, you certainly couldn't, no. And again, it goes back to the point, you know, OK, where did they go wrong? Why haven't they learnt the lessons? Where did they go wrong in the research and planning?
But how can they be so wrong? I mean, how can you make an estimate for doing something which is an engineering, you know, sort of project, which is very easy to cost, I would have thought, you know, in the sense that you know how many people you're going to need, you know how much equipment you're going to need, you know how long it's going to take. I mean, I beggar's belief that they get it so wrong.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say? I agree with you. You know, there's no excuse for it, really.
Yeah. Here's one from Pete who says, the Channel Tunnel was opened 25 years ago. If that was the last project which came in on time and in budget, we are doomed. I mean, it's a good thing you've remembered that. I mean, I'm not certain it did come in under budget, but I mean, you know, the great Christian Wolmar, who's quite often a guest on Julie Hartley Brewer's show here on Talk Radio, he wrote a book about Crossrail. He finished the book before Crossrail was finished.
Yeah, I know Christian. Obviously, we're in the same game. Yeah. He's the president of Rail Future, our organisation. So yeah. You know, he writes well, and it is kind of ironic, isn't it? You can
it really is.
You can write it up and get it published.
Yeah.
Although, you know, to be fair, writing a book is a little bit less effort than digging a tunnel under London.
But, I'll tell him that next time he comes in. Now, what about HS2? What's going on with that? Because that still seems to be very much behind schedule and over budget and still the subject of an awful lot of arguing going on between those people who don't want it to happen and those who do.
Yeah, I mean, the cost estimates keep going up and up and up. And I think, you know, in these uncertain political times, I think there are those in the corridors of power who want to stop it. And I think I'm right in saying that, or speculating, that some in a position of power are sort of keeping their options open by holding back on pressing the big go button, if you know what I mean.
Right.
There's been a lot of preparatory work, but you know, it still hasn't been given that final go. And I think what the government is fearing that, okay, well, you know, if we end up sort of abandoning it, then, you know, it's best not to spend as much money as possible. But we have already spent billions on it.
And they've already started buying up properties, haven't they?
Indeed, demolishing property and so on. I mean, you know, what we certainly need is the capacity, you know, because same as Crossrail, same as the Underground, you know, our railways are clogged. They're bursting at the seams. We need that extra capacity. I mean, I have some reservations about the detail of HS2, but if we don't do HS2, we need an alternative. There's no do-nothing option here.
Right, OK. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one as well, Bruce. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Bruce Williamson there from Rail Futures.